Hey you, how's it going? My name is Ruby Price and welcome to episode 7 of Fresh From The Scene. Today I'm doing something a little bit different because circumstances meant that I couldn't get a new podcast guest in time for this week's podcast, so I've invited back Josh Fielden and we're going to talk through our albums of the decade because it's December 2019 and it's about to go into January 2020. Which means that we've reached the end of whatever they're going to call this decade. I haven't actually checked. Tenties might make sense, you know, after noughties, but tenties just sounds really weird. And I really hope they don't call it the tens because that's pretty boring. So it'll be one of those. Tenties, tens, or 201s. I hope they don't go for 201s. That'll just get really confusing. Anyway, we have made a playlist on Apple Music and on Spotify for you to listen to all of the albums that we mentioned in this podcast, so make sure you go and check it out. There'll be a link in the description. You can also find Fresh From The Scene on Twitter at FFTScene, that's FFTScene, or you can find me online at Rubes. Don't forget to give the podcast a share on social media and, you know, leave a little review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to it on. That'd be pretty nice. Thank you. It's up to you. It's definitely an option. You just gotta scroll down. It says it there. Review. Anyway, fasten your seatbelts because here we go with mine and Josh Fielden's top 20 albums of the decade. Enjoy.
You're listening to Fresh From The Scene with your host, Ruby Price.
Welcome to Fresh From The Scene. Today I'm doing something a little bit different because it's the end of the decade and the end of the year. So I've invited back Josh Fielden and we're going to discuss albums of the decade.
It's like I never left.
Yeah, it's almost like you never left. You've even worn the same t-shirt just for the continuity.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know that you stream these. So I thought, just to match up. And yeah. I've got to promote my boy as well.
Yeah, promote your boy, Alex Vallejo.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I asked Josh to assemble a list of, you know, 10 albums that, you know, are basically his favourite or just ones that he really, you know, felt like defined his decade.
Yeah, so I had a real hard time compiling this list.
Yeah.
It's not in any particular order. It's not necessarily my favourites. No, sorry, they are all my favourites, but they might not be my favourites. I've got this problem where I listen to too many genres of music.
He's even wearing hipster glasses right now.
And I've got the beard and the glasses for the look. Also, quite a lot of the albums that I remembered weren't actually from this decade. So that caught me out a few times. But yeah, here's a good cross-section of albums that I've really enjoyed this decade.
So before we get started, do you have any honourable mentions?
Behind the Devil's Back, Firestar.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to say an album from, like, the 70s or something if you just let me off script.
It's a very honourable mention.
Yeah, off script. Let's stick to the list because I don't want to be factually incorrect and some angry tweeter come at me.
I've also got some honourable mentions.
Okay.
Yeah, to name three. AM Arctic Monkeys, you know. It's not their best album, but it's their best album of this decade.
Do you know what? Oh, no, wait. It's not this decade, so never mind. I was going to say Humbug, but that's 2009. Yeah.
Is probably their best album.
It's my favourite record, yeah. I think the Josh Homme.
Josh Homme. Homme. Josh Homme.
Josh Homme, yeah. His influence on that record is definitely a sound.
Mm.
It's really unique, and I like that.
Unfortunately, this isn't 2009. It's 2019, so strike Humbug from the record. Also, Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds, self-titled album. You know, I think it's probably the best thing he's done since the third album of Oasis. And then also, just to round it off, State Champs Around the World and Back, a classic staple of pop punk.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I like that. You've got quite a broad taste.
Wait till you hear the top 10 list.
Yeah.
So, anyway, hit me up with something from your top 10, Josh.
Do you want to go super hipster or not?
Super hipster. Let's make you approachable first.
Mainstream hipster. Okay, so because of the internet, Childish Gambino.
Oh, yeah.
And it just beats out Awaken My Love because Zealots of Stockholm it's just got this crazy synth pattern and I love it. And I pretty much listen to it sometimes just for that one song.
Just one crazy synth pattern.
Yeah, yeah, like the wilder, the weirder. I think it's more, it's definitely the experimental one, which I respect that.
Is that the one with This Is America on it?
No.
So it's not the...
Quite before then. It's okay. Before Awaken My Love, which is before This Is America.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I'm not a Childish Gambino fan. I don't know anything.
Yeah, it's always, I mean, it's consistently great stuff, but yeah. That's just the one for me, just because of the quirkiness.
The first one I'm going to list is Neck Deep's The Peace and the Panic from 2017. Many people would probably in this position put Life's Not Out to Get You, which was their album that basically broke them into the mainstream. But, you know, I prefer a lot more songs on The Peace and the Panic.
Yeah, go for it. It's often the ones that aren't part of the mainstream that are the ones that we enjoy the most.
Yeah, he says in massive hipster sense.
Yeah.
Moving on.
I've got a deep, deep love for what's going on in the Scandinavian regions musically at the moment.
Okay.
Danish, Finnish, Swedish music. I think it stems from, like, I grew up with, like, In Flames and At the Gates and the sort of Swedish melodic metal upbringing. But right now, they've kind of doing everything from, like, pop to metal. So I'm just going to get all the Scandinavian guys out of the way. Destria by Agent Fresco. I think they're Icelandic. It's just a soundscape of good pop rock songs that I've never heard of anything like it. It's just got such a unique sound to that whole record. The Congregation by Leprous. That's just, I mean, it's just a prog metal masterpiece through and through. And Faroe Islands singer called Ivor. And I actually discovered this album flying back from Iceland, where I went to see Sigur Rós.
Okay.
Just at the end of 2017. I'm not sure, 1 or 2 years ago. But I went to see Sigur Rós do like an open festival at the Arts Centre there, which was truly, truly mind-blowing. But I found this album called Slow by an artist called Ivor. I think I pronounced it right. She's also the vocalist on the God of War soundtrack.
Oh, really?
The female, like, the soaring female vocalist thing that's going on there, which is a game that I just think it's the perfect game, frankly. And the album exists in two forms, Icelandic and English.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, and I possibly the Icelandic one a bit more, just because I could get a bit more lost in the world of this soundscape. It's kind of like down-tempo pop. There's a few tracks where there's this sort of traditional beatboxing, but not like Western like beatboxing. It's like mouth noises and clicks and stuff, which I just thought was brilliant. Really, really love that.
Just using your voice as an instrument.
Totally, yeah. And it's great. I love it. Check it out. It's a bit of a curveball.
Some Icelandic mouth noises. Yeah, I'm going to throw Fight Stars Behind the Devils back into this mix. You know, I think that is a very solid record, and arguably the only thing wrong with it is how short it is.
Behind the Devil's Back, yeah. I mean, I've got a huge love for Firestar.
Yeah.
They were at the time where everyone was shunning them because it's Charlie from Busted, and everybody was still hungover about that. I was smashing that album. Many, many sleepless nights listening to One Day, Son, This Will All Be Yours and Grand Unification.
Yeah.
And it's been a huge influence on my songwriting, the way I play, just in life in general. Even Be Human, like, that gets a bit of a bad rep, but I like that they tried something different with it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a really dry production.
The first Fight Star song I actually heard was Mercury Summer, which is obviously off Be Human.
Yeah.
And then it remained the only Fight Star song I heard until, like, I think Sharp Tongue was the single that they dropped from Behind the Devil's Back. And I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, it's a bit of a departure, right?
Yeah.
That's the thing I love. They're not afraid to cover such a broad spectrum of sounds.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm here for that. I'm here for that all the time.
I mean, Behind the Devil's Back itself, like, you've got, obviously, the aggressive, you know, songs like Sharp Tongue, but then you've also got things like Dive or, you know,
Parts
of Animal, you know. Yeah,
the balance.
It's a really well-balanced record.
It's a super well-balanced record, and it all sounds, like, unified. That album all sounds like it comes from that same space, no matter how diverse the songwriting may be. Yeah, you're right, it's criminally short.
Yeah.
I could do with, like, another, like, 30 minutes of that record. It's really short. It's like 34 minutes, something like that.
I'm going to find out.
Yeah, let's find that out.
Well, Behind the Devil's Back is 36 minutes long.
36 minutes. I was only 2 minutes away.
That's a very short record.
Yeah, I was only 2 minutes away. That's incredibly short. Yeah, it should be 45 at least.
Yeah.
Come on, Firestar.
I mean, like the new Busted record as well, which is definitely not in my top 10.
I've avoided that one.
Yeah, that's short as well. Like, there's 10 tracks on it, and it's still very, very short.
I think we need to petition to get Charlie back over on the Firestar side.
And I would be very happy with that.
And, yeah, bring about another record. Come on, dude, it's been 5 years. Get on it. Speaking of short records, 22 A Million, Bon Iver. That's another incredibly short record, but kind of makes up for it because it's so experimental.
Mm.
I mean, there's sounds on there that I couldn't even imagine, like, conjure up in my brain.
Yeah.
These sounds that are on there. So just for experimental factor alone, that wins my decade.
Your vote.
For Bon Iver records.
I'm going to chuck into the equation a new record from this year. Bang Bang Romeo, Heartbreaker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Mm.
Like, it's an album I was waiting for a very long time, having known Rich, like, from before the days of Bang Bang Romeo being signed to, I think it's 5-7.
Yeah, I mean, there's Doncaster local guys, right? Yeah, they're absolutely crushing it at the moment.
Yeah.
I'm a sinner. I've not listened to the album yet, but I'll make sure to very, very shortly.
I think we should assemble a playlist on both Apple Music and Spotify for this list of songs.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Why not? I can suggest things all day.
I specify Apple Music because Josh is not a fan of Spotify.
Well, I mean, Apple Music is also the lesser of two evils, but the argument that I make every single time, and I want to be vocal about it, but not offensive.
Mm. Just say it.
I listen to a lot of local music on, more so than mainstream music, really. And the way Spotify operates, it's like a top-down system. So your Ed Sheeran's, your Beyonce's, they're on like a fixed wage.
Mm.
And then the scraps trickle down through a very, very densely veiled net of crap. With Apple Music, they don't need bailing out in the same way that Spotify do. Spotify have never once made a profit.
Yeah.
Because of greedy CEOs and these contracts where your top artists are basically on a fixed fee. Apple Music's also part of another evil conglomeration. But that also means that it can subsidise and afford to not have those contracts, which means that the pay system is fairer. For me, and this is when I changed over, is when I was looking at royalties from the Mahatma Raindrop records, which I managed the releases for. You would need three times as many listens on Spotify to make. It's literally three times as much pay. So when I'm listening to my friends and local artists, I feel I sleep a little easier at night knowing that
you're giving them three times as much from one stream.
Three times as much from one stream, yeah. And I wish I could, like, stream farm, but that's, you know, technically fraud. I'm not committing fraud. But, yeah, I just think it's a fairer pay system.
Mm.
It's not fair. It's
but
not
fairer.
It's fairer, yeah. It is the lesser of two evils. And also I found the app more stable, but that's more of just a
personal preference.
A phone, whatever phone you're using, developer thing.
Yeah. Another album?
A Fever Dream, Everything, Everything.
Okay.
Now, I wasn't into Everything, Everything for a longest time because I just never come across them.
Hmm.
A good friend of mine put me onto them. And then shortly after I was an Everything, Everything fan, I saw them like 4 or 5 times in a row. They were just gigging loads and I just saw them everywhere. Incredible live show. Incredible, like, take on pop music. They call themselves like avant-garde pop or something like that. And it is. It's pop, dancey, some of it's disco, dancey, very hooky melodies, but odd, like slightly off-kilter.
Mm.
A Fever Dream, it was the last record they put out, other than the EP, which was just like a 2-3 track EP. And it's got some really dark, like the title track itself is really dark piano ballad. And it's got polyrhythms in. Polyrhythms are cool. I like prog music. So it's like polyrhythmic pop music. Yeah, I'm all in. But it's got super big poppy tunes like Can't Do. So it's again a broad experimental spectrum. You see a theme here. I like people that take
you like it when they go for something a little bit different to what, you know, everyone else in said part of the industry is doing.
Yeah, I'm totally here for the quirks, yeah.
Yeah.
And I believe they're Manchester based, so fairly local.
Hmm.
And yeah, crushing it.
I'm gonna throw in Bring Me the Horizon, Sem Paternal from 2013.
Oh, do you know what? I nearly went with that as well. I nearly put that in there.
Yeah, I feel like it's an album that basically revolutionised, like, not specifically British, but at the same time British just sort of metalcore.
Yeah.
You know, like, that album started almost a revolution.
It definitely fast-tracked it to the mainstream.
Yeah.
It was.
I mean, look at where Bring Me the Horizon are now. They're getting Radio 1 play.
Yeah,
at the same time that, like, you know,
Sem Paternal had Radio 1 play.
Yeah.
Maybe on, like, the evening show, but, yeah. It, you know, it definitely...
They had, like, you know, Daniel P. Carter and stuff like that. Mm. Like, now it's... Well, I don't even know any Radio 1 presenters anymore. It's the state that I'm in.
It totally stepped that... It broke down that barrier.
Yeah.
You know, when I was growing up... And I was skating on the streets, nah, whatever. I was the mosher crew, you know. I listened to, it was like death to all but metal.
Mm.
I'm not going to listen to your pop crap. It was
if it's got autotune and it's fake
music. Yeah, totally. And it was like the moshers and the goths and the skaters versus the chavs and the footy kids. And it just broke down that wall.
Yeah,
and it was just like, it's okay to like rock music. And then all the rock dudes were like, oh, it's okay to like synths now.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
Definitely.
There's a pun there.
Seminal.
No. Yeah, we'll go with that.
We'll go with that. Rather than spend an hour just coming up with one pun.
We've got to talk about Enter Shikari whilst we're here. I mean, they're the album.
The fact we've both got Enter Shikari on this list, but, you know.
They're the artist of the decade, frankly.
Yeah, definitely.
When did Take to the Skies come out? 2008? 2007?
Maybe 2007.
Mm. And since then, it's been such a joy to watch them grow in that way, in the way that they have. Yeah, it's been such a joy to watch them. I was a denier at first, you know. Sorry or not. You know, it's so corny, but... And I was like, oh, what's all this arpeggios and synths about? And why does it sound like dance music but metal? Oh, it's so cheesy. I hate it. It's emo. It's weemo music. But it didn't take me long to come round. And big fan since Take to the Skies.
Mm.
And they've just gone from strength to strength to strength to strength. My personal favourite is the Mind Sweep.
Yeah.
I think it just appeals to my...
The appeal in the Mind Sweep.
It appeals to my sense of... I like the slightly heavier side of it. It's a bit heavier than Flash Flood. Common Dreads is the one that's got a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
But I can admit that it's a flawed album. Well, not flawed, but, like, their ambitions were beyond the production value.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. The production value was left wanting, I guess. But the Mind Sweep was just... It's just flawless, production-wise. It's the messages, you know, Anaesthetist and One True Colour.
Yeah.
All the messages in the song, very science-heavy, very...
They're future historians as well.
Yeah. Yeah, very science... Even the emotional ballad song has got, like, this Einstein level of intelligence sewed into it. And I love that. Don't get me wrong, I love every single one of their albums, but the Mind Sweep, it just pits it at the top.
Yeah. I mean, since we're on the topic of Shikari, like, even though, you know, I've been doing mine in order, I'm going to break my order now just purely to, you know, keep it topical. You know, for me, it's a Flash Flood of Colour just because I really like the album itself feels very one thing.
Mm.
And, like, purely just Gandhi Make Gandhi is what makes that album that album for me.
That song changed live shows.
Yeah.
I can say that with absolute certainty because I saw them at the end of the Common Dreads cycle.
Yeah.
And they played Zonked. That was it's a bit of a get your knees up kind of tune. But when Gandhi Make Gandhi was played live, it was just utter destruction, carnage, chaos. The breakdown at the end, it's so heavy and slow. People, like, forget how to mosh. And it just becomes this sludge of people. It's quite incredible because it's so slow and brutal, and just all the punchlines in that song as well. It's one of the few moments where the audience is louder than the band, and I'm okay with it.
Yeah, definitely. But back to your list then.
Going back to Progland, Asymmetry by Carnival, they're an Australian band.
Okay.
Now, a lot of people say Sound Awake is the one, which is the second album, the one before Asymmetry, produced by Forrester Savelle, who's a big inspiration for me. Like, that record is impeccable sounding. It's got the filthiest bass tone in the world. It's the bass tone that when I'm like engineering on a new system, if I go to a venue and I'm doing live sound or I go to a studio and I'm not used to the speakers, I put that on and just be like, how does this bass sit in this room? Because it's just like speaker destruction levels of bass. I love it. But Asymmetry, again, it's just the experimental nature of it.
Mm.
They just really deconstructed what happened on Sound Awake, which was progressive rock, but kind of like had all the guitar and drum tropes that you expect from the genre. And they kind of deconstructed that. Sometimes it's a little bit slower, a bit more intimate, sometimes faster and heavier, wilder. Some of the harmony just doesn't make sense, but it's not functional, but it sounds good. You know, they're willing to step across the line. And they produced it all themselves, so I've got to give them credit for that. You know, they had one of the best producers in the world, Forrester Savell, and they turned him away, which is a very brave and potentially dangerous move, but it paid off, I think, in their case. And I think this album does alienate their fans a little bit because it does, like I said, deconstruct what the sound was before. That's why I love it. The reason why people hate it is the reason why I love it.
I mean, you know, this is a very personal list.
Oh, yeah.
We're not saying these are objectively the best, you know, songs of the decade, or albums of the decade, in fact. I'm going to go and say Panic at the Disco's Death of a Bachelor, purely because it's the album that properly got me to listen to Panic at the Disco properly, because I was obviously aware
properly,
of
properly.
Properly, properly.
Proper, properly.
Properly, properly.
You know, it's serious when I know they're just saying it's proper, proper.
Proper, proper. You know, I was obviously aware of them because of, like, all of their singles from the previous albums, like I'd heard, but I'd never really sat down and listened to a full Panic at the Disco album. And then Death of a Bachelor came out, and I was like, I really like this.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then went back and basically bought their entire discography.
Mm-hmm.
And then they headlined Slam Dunk in the same year.
Yeah.
I went to that, and it was... Yeah. One of my favourite gig experiences that I've been to.
Awesome. Yeah, and I know they put on an incredible live show.
Mm.
What's the guy's name? Brendan Urie?
Brendan Urie.
Yeah, he's such a stage man.
Yeah, definitely.
And the voice is incredible. I mean, I'm probably stuck in my ways a little bit in that the first album was always the one for me.
Oh, the first album is my favourite Panic! At the Disco album, but unfortunately it came out in 2005.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
I can see you tensing up the more I talked about Death of a Bachelor.
Well, okay. I've heard it a lot. My lovely girlfriend, she really likes that record, and when she drives a lot, so we hear it a lot in the car. I've got one huge issue with that album. It's got that modern production element.
Yeah.
Where it's...
There's like a massive like volume like thing with
it's
it.
It's super
well.
Loud, right? Yeah. Right? It's incredibly loud. It's definitely a contender for winning the loudness war. And it's really harsh, high frequencies all the time. And I think there's a time and place for that, but the whole record sounds like that.
Mm.
So I literally, my ears feel tired after I finished. Some brilliant songwriting on there.
Yeah.
And I'd probably prefer to see it live. That's my only issue with the album. I don't want to give it super negatives because, like I said, there are some fantastic songs on there.
Yeah.
But as a producer, there's bits of it that offend me.
I mean, the thing that annoys me most about it is if a song from it comes on shuffle on my, like, you know, when I'm listening to it, I've got to then turn my phone down specifically for that one
song.
Yeah,
it's incredible, yeah. Yeah, it's too much.
Mm.
Too much. Slightly overcooked it, I might say. It's like, yeah.
It was oven ready, and then it was oven burnt.
Yeah, it was, yeah. You forgot to ask Alexa to put 20 minutes on the timer for that one.
Yeah.
40 minutes later, it's just cinders. Yeah. So we're out of sync now, because I gave 3 albums in one example.
Oh, yeah. Should I give some more?
So I think you need to catch up, yeah.
Right, cool. Well, I will mention an album that I only actually started listening to this summer, despite the fact it came out in 2015.
Controversial.
Yeah. I was very slow to the 21 Pilots hype.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is sort of strange because I'm like a fangirl. I'm probably 21 Pilots' target audience, other than the fact that I'm 24.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. But I saw them co-headlining Leedsfest this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, like, just something switched. I went back and I listened to all of their discography. And the one album that stuck out is Blurry Face. Like, I do enjoy the Trench, but I think Blurry Face as itself is a more solid record for what it is that they do, because they're obviously very diverse. That, like, they don't really...
Yeah, I have
one
no
genre.
Idea what genre they are.
I don't know what genre
everything?
They are, and I've seen them.
Do they know what genre they are?
Well,
that's cool. I respect that. I
guess it's like Primus. Their genre is 21 Pilots. Primus's genre is Primus.
Primus fucking suck.
Yeah. I'm just using an example.
Yeah. You don't get it?
No.
Primus fucking suck is like the band thing. That's what their fans say. That's okay. Like their call out, Primus fucking suck. I think it's meant to be super like ironic upon irony.
Yeah.
You know?
But yeah, so if I'm catching up, I need another one, don't I? Another band that I slept on, really. The 1975.
Sleeperman, yeah.
I did not think that I would ever actually say this. But, you know, A Brief Inquiry into Online Relationships, which I know isn't your favourite.
Is that the new one? Or the one before the new one?
It's the one with Give Yourself a Try.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to keep quiet on this one because I think it's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, this is
that's
the...
all I'm going to say.
This is the one that actually got me listening to the 1975 because I was on my way back from London and I needed stuff to listen to. And I was like, well, my friends have told me that this is all right. And I listened to it and it just sort of, you know, I just really like the like composing aspect to this album. Like, there's a lot of unconventional like song structure choices that I wouldn't have expected to be on it.
Yeah, they're not going in the pop outline of songs anymore.
No.
Which I respect them for that. I do respect them for that. For me,
they're definitely moving away from pop right now with what they're releasing.
Oh yeah, the last one was super like gritty.
People was just an interesting thing to experience live.
Oh, you seen it live?
That was the first time I heard it.
Yeah, the first time I heard it was the footage from whatever festival over the summer. I'd never experienced it live.
No.
Yeah, again, that's the reason why I don't like it is a production thing. Now, there's this whole aesthetic of, like, going back to the Billie Eilish thing of imperfect production or just kind of, like, really DIY. But, I don't know, when you make a guitar tone so abrasive as that, there's just a point where it offends me to my core.
The guitar tone in Give Yourself a Try is something to...
It's deliberately offensive, and I get it, but I just can't overcome that. I think the aesthetic choice of that is, like... Making something bad sound good is an aesthetic choice, and I'm here for it 90% of the time, but that's just something about it.
My friend did a cover of it and took away the guitar line from that song.
They probably fixed it then.
Quite possibly. Yeah. But that brings us back into sync.
That does bring us back into sync. Now, my last two are boring. I got the good ones out of the way first.
Wow.
There's one called Waking Season by Caspian, but it quite easily could have been a Godspeed You, Black Emperor. And this is purely self-indulgent, ambient post-rock. It could have equally been Dust and Disquiet, but Waking Season, I think, had a more of an emotional impact for me at the time that it came out. It's long, droney, chordy, epic, sometimes uplifting, sometimes depressing guitar. Guitar orchestra music, basically. I've got a big love for post-rock, shoegaze, just soundscapes, you know, using guitars to make something larger than a guitar sound. You know, we used to hear in like a distorted power chord. Well, that's just like the sound of a guitar, but it's using reverbs and just going to town on that. It's that self-indulgent one that's hard to describe at the expense of sounding hipster as fuck, which I am. I don't care. Working Season. In particular, there's two songs on there called Gone in Bloom and Bow, and it might be Halls of Summer, which is just such a slow building song, and it's like 12 minutes long. It's crazy. But it's such a small place that it starts at. And by the end of the song, the guitar players have left the guitars. They've just got like a feedback loop going on, and they're all on drums playing crazy like drum orchestra. And just that development from what happens in those 12 minutes is truly, truly spectacular to me. And very sort of just like, we're going to do this because we want to. It's really emotional and powerful, and I just love it. I'm here for it.
I'm going to say Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes, Modern Ruin.
Yeah, I know you're a big fan.
Yeah. Funnily enough, like, when people discuss which is their best album, you know, most people would say Blossom, because it's a lot more raw and, you know, that's very much a hardcore punk album.
Yeah, that's, I mean, he came from the Gallows, right? The Gallows? Gallows.
It was Gallows, Pure Love, Frank Carter, Rattlesnakes.
Yeah, so, I mean, Gallows. Yeah.
Gallows fans obviously want to go for the heavy, fast-paced, screamy stuff.
That's where I'm at, yeah.
And then, like, the Pure Love people want to go for the stuff, like, that's not even maybe Modern Ruin, but more End of Suffering, which is their latest record, which I do enjoy, but at the same time, that album has its flaws, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Modern Ruin, I just think the diversity of the songs on there, there's some really good song craft going on in it as well. Like, and a lot of the songs, having seen them and experienced them live, just sort of solidifies them in a sense. Mm. Like if there was anything that was sort of doubtful about them, them being played live just adds like another level to it.
Yeah.
Just to take it above. Like if it was an 8, it makes it a 9 if it was a, you know.
I think there's a thing to be said for people and artists that come from a super heavy background. Like Gallows was just straight hardcore.
Yeah.
And when they try and break that boundary into more songwriting elements, or some might call it selling out or poppy, whatever category you want to put it in, it's kind of got precariousness to it. It's kind of like, oh, this is dangerous for this artist to try and do that.
Yeah, because it can completely wreck your band, sort of like, you know.
Yeah, if the fans aren't receptive to it, then you've got to build a new fan base.
Yeah. I mean, to go back to what we were saying when I brought up Bring Me the Horizon, you know, every single album that Bring Me the Horizon have brought out since Sempiternal, and some might even include Sempiternal in this list, like they just say they're becoming less and less of the band that they were, which is true to an extent, because, you know, if you listen to, I've forgotten the name of their 2006 album, which is just straight up deathcore.
Suicide Season.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
You know, like if you compare Suicide Season to Ammo, you'd be like, is this even the same band?
Exactly. I've still got a big love for There Is a Hell.
Yeah.
There Is a Heaven, whichever.
There Is a Hell is the one I think there is.
Yeah. Again, that's just got such a raw thing going for it. But you're right. And the thing that they did that was so good was, they made the album and they made Ammo and said, we're not a rock band anymore. We're a pop band. And they just owned it. And I think that's
the best thing that you can
do. Yeah, it's the honourable thing to do, right? You're not trying to keep... If your metal fans want to depart, then it's kind of okay just to let your metal fans go.
Yeah. They can always listen to the old albums and there are other bands emerging in the scene.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I would say that you don't need to... If you like an album so much, then... get a copy of it.
Yeah.
Go out and buy a CD.
Go buy vinyl or something.
Yeah, totally. For albums that I truly love, I've got a copy of it, you know.
Yeah.
And then I'll just stream it if I'm out and about. But yeah, it's always, like I was saying, it's precarious. It's kind of like a danger element.
Yeah.
Which some fans find exciting. And I think that's possibly what you've done is you've listened to the album and gone, oh, good, this is good. You've reserved any judgment of where he's come from.
I'm a music journalist. I have to.
Yeah, okay. It's kind of like instinctual for you, but yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
I think it's good that, like I say, all these albums that I've given examples of, they're all albums where they've tried to diversify or be a bit more experimental.
Mm.
And sometimes it pays off, sometimes it doesn't, but I always respect it.
Your last one then.
This is, and it's kind of possibly not even anywhere near my favourite one of the lot.
It's just the last on your list.
It's just the one that's fallen last, and it's Shallow Bed by Dry the River.
Yeah.
It's different for me. I think that's why it's on this list. It's not something I would usually listen to, but it's very raw. It's kind of like folky tinged rock.
Okay.
I think it came from acoustic-y folk music, but got the rock production treatment.
Mm.
And again, it's just one of those records that sounds complete and unified all together. It just works all as one. And it's a kind of songwriting that I don't usually go for, but they make it work.
Yeah.
It's dark. It's dark and uplifting all at the same time. It's just a little bit different for my tastes, which is why it's made it onto this record. And it's just good, humble, honest songwriting, good singing, loads of vocal harmonies, which I'm a sucker for vocal harmonies.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, mine won't come as any surprise to anyone who knows me at all, but it's As It Is, The Great Depression from 2018.
Yeah?
Yeah, I just really like the fact that a band who had been, you know, just written off as just like a nasally pop-punk band, you know, just sort of thought, you know what, we're gonna go heavier for our next album. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that's not normally the trajectory that you get.
Yeah, right.
In pop punk.
So we're on about the opposite happening with Bring Me the Horizon and Frank Carter.
Yeah, it's like
they've gone heavier now.
Yeah,
awesome.
A lot of their like influences that they list for the Great Depression are bands like, you know, Funeral for a Friend, bands that like Welsh post hardcore scene at least.
Yeah,
you know.
Do you think maybe they did that because there's this like barrier-breaking thing happening now between rock and the mainstream?
Quite possibly, because I've heard some of the demos from The Great Depression, which were recorded during like the previous album cycle, and they were very much just, you know, pop-punky. Like, I don't think I would have enjoyed this album as much. I say, as an As It Is fan, if it had been the way that, you know, like, I know it's a demo, but if it had been the way that the demo was recorded and how it sounded, you know, just there's a completely different vibe in the way the album itself is made up. The album is deliberately made as an album, you know, like, it's got specific sections to it. It's designed to be played on a record player, in a sense.
Is it sort of like a concept album?
Yes, it is very much a concept album.
Right, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Like,
yeah, I think you can't go wrong with a concept album.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of people say, like, the format of the album is dying.
Yeah.
Well, no, I don't think it is. I think people just need to... I don't know, when you're in the industry, you get told that you have to make singles, you have to make singles, and you have to keep constantly pushing out content. But I think if you do what As It Is had done and just consolidate yourselves, maybe you don't get heard of for, like, a year or two whilst you're making the record, but just go for it. I don't think the album art form is dead. I think there's more pressure from the way we consume media now to be single-based.
Mm.
But you've kind of just got to put your foot down and just say, I am doing this album and it's going to be a concept album or something like that. Just do something that adds that extra incentive to listen to it as a whole rather than listen to it broken up in singles or whatever. I'm an album guy. Mm. When I'm listening to music, when I'm leaving the house, I find an album and put that on. And then maybe halfway through I'll queue up the next album that I want to listen to. I can't really... I'm not a random guy. I can't really... I like to have an experience from beginning to end. I treat them almost like films.
Yeah.
You know,
like you don't start, like, the first act of a film and then put in another DVD or Blu-ray and be
totally,
like, all
right,
cool, I'm watching this now.
Yeah, totally. It's the same concept for me. I like to...
It might improve some films, but...
Yeah, there's some films, yeah, like... I mean, this is how my first experience of music editing and software was using Audacity
to splice songs together.
Yeah, and put songs in like I did it along with Avenged Sevenfold for some reason. But I'd restructure the song, like I'd cut the song and say if I wanted the chorus to be longer, I'd double the chorus, or I wanted the chorus to be shorter, or I wanted, like, this middle section to come back later on in the song. I would literally do that as a kid with Audacity and then save it to my Motorola Razr phone and listen to it in school, on the way to school or whatever, on the bus in the morning. Oh, no, I never... Well, sometimes did the bus, but, like, 40-minute walk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Like, doing my own supercuts of songs and albums.
For those of you that heard last week's podcast, there is the origins of Joshua Field and producer.
Secrets revealed, yeah. Top 10 producer tips, that some clickbait title.
But yeah, those are our albums of the decade.
Yeah, I'm sorry that mine was so obscure, but I hope that some people go out and listen to them.
I mean, like I've said, we're going to compile a playlist together.
Totally, if people go out and listen to those records and think they're terrible, then whatever, at least they've given them a chance.
Yeah.
If they think they're awesome, then awesome. I mean,
what's the worst that can happen? You discover a new band that you really like?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Maybe from what I've been saying about yours, I should be a bit more open-minded as well.
Maybe a little bit. That's my secret agenda here.
Yeah.
Just so I can come round and play board games and listen to music I like.
We'll see about that.
Not going to happen, is it?
We'll see about that.
No. But yeah, thank you for coming back on.
You're welcome. Yeah. Thanks for having me. And best of luck with the future podcasts.
Future podcasts.
You're listening to Fresh from the Scene with Ruby Price.
Thank you very much for listening. I'm very sorry I couldn't get a new podcast guest, but there will be quite a few podcast guests coming up. Yeah. And I figure, you know, it's the end of the decade. We can sort of relax a little bit. I mean, who's counting really, you know? 7 podcasts, 6 guests. Can get away with that, right? I hope we can get away with it. I'll have to check the podcast terms and conditions that I signed up for. I'm sure there'll be a rule somewhere. Anyway, if you did enjoy this podcast, make sure that you leave a review, give it a share on social media, stuff like that. As I said, there are links to a playlist of all of these albums on Spotify and on Apple Music in the description, so make sure you go and check those out. I should be back next week, just after Christmas, with a new podcast, so make sure you keep an ear out for that. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.